All right, second out here, Robbie and Rex show, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Paul Kuharski in for Robbie Stanley. Nick Keyser, intern Robert. Here we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we're so happy to welcome in our next guest. Do we have the Stillbilly? We have another nickname for Jared Stillman. Jared, what do you think about Stillbilly?
It's the nickname.
Do you like Stillbilly better than Stilly the Pooh? Which one would you choose?
I got to tell you, I got to give Paul credit. I mean, that was a pretty good comeback when he's the one who was originally called a hillbilly by me because he doesn't know how to charge a car.
That's right. That's how this all started.
I don't know how to charge my car.
I mean, for you to give me a Southern accent is maybe the dumbest thing in history.
Let's get started right away.
Jared.
Joe, how do you charge one of them newfangled charging cars?
This is the dumbest. I mean, for you to top yourself on the dumbness scale, for you, a Southerner who has a bit of a Southern accent at times, to give me a Southern accent.
Okay.
I mean, this is the least self-aware you've ever been in history.
I don't know how to
picture
charge
you,
the car.
Yeah, you can say it over and over. It doesn't get any better.
No, but it's
do you ever look at? I picture you looking in a mirror all day, but yet you have no self awareness that you kind of look like a hillbilly, especially if you
like
stand in profile.
Do I have a line beard, Paul?
You do shave your beard in a line. You have a big belly. I'm sorry, I don't want to get into looks. Well, a lot of hillbillies don't eat particularly well and have that look. You're from the South.
Yes, but I have all my teeth,
Paul. You went to a poor school. Congratulations on going to a school, but you went to a poor school. I would be what you call like an Ivy League elite. I'm not necessarily proud of being called that. I'm told by everybody I know that Louisville's like incredible. You and I have discussed this. You said, I got where I needed to go out of going to Louisville. I know it's not very good, but it served me well.
I will say this. I do hope that my son is a little bit more active when it comes to caring about where he goes to college than I was. Worked out good for
Boom.
Me.
Boom! Hillbilly attitude.
You know, I will hope. Because I hope better for my son, Paul.
I'm just going to just stay out. This is like
well, look, you are the Stillbilly. You should rename the show. It'll help your ratings.
I just don't understand how you don't know how to charge a car. It's simple.
You don't really you've never business traveled. I understand that. I know you once in a while drive to the combine or something like that. But for people on business trips, A, I don't know how to charge one because I've never done one. And B, I'm not interested on a trip where I'm actively working in stopping for 20 minutes to fuel up as opposed to stopping at a gas station for 3 minutes. I know you can't understand this, but I'm a regular business traveler.
Not understanding how to charge an electric
car. I don't even know where to charge an electric car. I'm not ashamed to admit it. You know why? I've never done it. And I don't want to change
I'm stepping in.
My travel
routine. All right. Can we scream about the Titans? Can we get you both screaming
right,
at each
well,
other
I ask,
with
I
the Titans
ask him about,
as the subject matter?
I want to ask him about a potential the Titans quarterback. We know Sam Darnold is slated to be a free agent. Jared, for some reason, thinks Minnesota is going to franchise tag him when they've got J.J. McCarthy, who they spent the 10th pick in the draft on, who's scheduled to be back from his injury next year. Why in the world would a team with $74 million in cap space scheduled give him a $38 million franchise tag and spend 51% of their cap money on Sam Darnold next year?
Number one, the cap's fake. Number two is the tag 38 for the quarterback? Because I think it may be closer to 50, given how many $55 million quarterbacks
there
are.
Well, if it's 50, it'd be an even stupider move. But what I found was 38.
I think it would be at 50. Here's what I think is going to happen is I think they're going to franchise tag him, and then they're going to trade him because I think that there's going to be about six or seven teams that need a quarterback. And it sounds like there's two quarterbacks that are draftable, and even those two people don't really like. And so, okay, now you're down to five teams that need a quarterback. And so I think then it becomes this kind of similar bidding situation that the Chiefs have with L'Jarius Sneed without the knee injury hanging over Sam Darnold's head. That is, okay, who wants to trade us for Sam Darnold? And I think that in that instance, it's like, could you get a second-round pick, you know, from a team in exchange for Sam Darnold, and then they extend Sam Darnold their own, and it's like, okay, we've got our quarterback. That's why I think they're going to tag him.
You think somebody's going to see Sam Darnold as a long-term solution that they've got to negotiate out of a $50 million one-year price
tag? Well, but it could be like a Baker deal, but just higher number, right? Like there are – right? Like you could have a – it's not this is the guy forever and ever, but we could – have three pretty good years of this guy and see what happens, right?
Well, I think it's conceivable, but negotiating him out of the $50 million tag, if he has it, or 38, is going to be difficult because he's got a lot of leverage there.
He's got a ton of leverage if you do that. That doesn't mean that every team's smart. That's why I don't think the Titans should do it. Because, again, like the whole thing started when Jeremy Fowler reported, or not reported, that's the wrong word, when Jeremy Fowler opined that Sam Darnold could be the quarterback of the Titans. And, I mean, I like Sam Darnold. I don't love Sam Darnold. But I did feel like, okay, if that happens, they're going to tag him. And then they're going to want your second-round pick. So they're going to want the 34th pick in the draft in order to make that trade. And maybe nobody else offers. Maybe the Giants aren't interested. Maybe the Saints aren't interested. Maybe all these other teams that are going to need a quarterback aren't interested in Sam Darnold, and then you can – it was similar with Snead. I think that Kansas City thought they'd get a first-round pick, like a low first, in exchange for Snead. I think the Bengals tagged T. Higgins with the intention of trading him for a first or a second-round
pick. They
should
tag him and keep him. They should, if the cap isn't real, which is we won't get into, they should absolutely just try to find a way to keep tag
T. Higgins. I don't know what kind of spenders the Wilf family are. I don't know that they're cheap or – not.
Yeah, we know the Browns.
But if they've – I mean, if they're big spenders, then they should use the tag. And if they have to end up keeping Sam Darnold, then they can. But I think that, again, there are so many quarterback needy teams in this league that somebody will take a bite on it. And somebody will take a bite because there will be a situation. You brought this up, Paul, the other day, and I actually think you're right, which is if Rand Carthon returns as the general manager – there are probably going to be some self-preservation moves that are more focused on being better in 2025 than maybe being better in 26 or 27. And a move to go get Sam Darnold, a 28-year-old quarterback who's got 7 years of experience, would be more of a self-preservation move than, okay, well, let's bring in Jacoby Brissett, draft Jalen Milroe, and stick Jalen Milroe on the bench. And I got to believe that one of those five or six teams that needs a quarterback will look at Sam Darnold like that as, well, this is the best shot we have to keep our jobs.
Here's the one other thing, downside to what you're saying. If the Vikings were to do this, which I don't think is likely, he takes up a lot of cap room. If people slow play it, if it's not an immediate move, he's taking up a huge chunk of their cap stuff until they make the move, and that slows them down on doing whatever else they want to do.
Cap's fake, Paul.
I wanted to ask you about Floyd, because the right tackle story sickens me for how much you tell it as if it's some kind of prophetic, huge
It's like an Aesop's
statement.
Fable.
Did you think Floyd deserved to be fired when he got fired?
Did I think he deserved to be fired when he was fired? When I was a sophomore in high school.
Well, or looking back, I know you've studied him like the Talmud, so.
No, I think they fired the wrong guy.
You think they fired the wrong guy?
I mean, how can you fire the general manager right after he drafts the rookie of the year who goes to the Pro Bowl at quarterback?
Okay, so do you think this year's Titans could win two more games? Conceivable. Two against the Jags, one against the Colts.
I think they'd have to steal one against Jacksonville and then beat in. Yeah, I mean, I guess it is conceivable.
Okay, so if the Titans win two more games this year, their three-year record – bear with me here. Their three-year record is going to be 17-34. Floyd's three-year record before he got fired was 17-31. So you're going to call for the heads of this regime at 17-34, conceivably, but Floyd shouldn't have gotten fired at 17-31.
So you mean the two teams?
The two teams.
You're talking about 2 years, right?
No,
you
this is three years.
So
I'm looking at Floyd's last 3 years. I'm looking at the last 3 years of this. That's how the math works. Floyd had 17. Three bad years at the end, and this team has had three bad years. One of them belonged to Robinson. The years don't sync up, unfortunately, but the records do.
So here's what I would say. If Rand Carthon and Chad Brinker shown any positive signs at all of ever building something that you can tangibly say, hey, these guys know what they're doing? Have they been to the Super Bowl, Paul?
Of course not.
Have they won a division title?
Of course not.
Okay, and have they drafted the rookie of the year at quarterback with a first-round pick that you can say, hey, we're building
around
this guy?
Hey, Jared, you know who made the Vince Young pick, don't you?
All I know is if Floyd said, I asked
Bud?
Him, I said, who'd you want?
Bud
told him who he's picking. He didn't have any choice in that.
I said to Floyd, I said, you know, because Jeff Fisher has changed who he wanted. He told people originally that he wanted Matt Leinart, which, I mean, if you hired Matt Leinart's coach, it probably would make me think that you wanted Matt Leinart. But then he said when he was at the end there with the Rams, he said that he wanted Jay Cutler. Now, Jeff Fisher's made up a lot of things over the years, like how he went to
I will interject on this whole question, Paul.
Isn't it possible that it just should have been Fisher instead of Floyd with that record? Same record, right?
It's possible it should have been both.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, if Jared's calling for the heads of everybody at 17 and 34, his hero was 17 and 31, and he shouldn't have been fired.
But what hope do the Titans have going forward right now? Like, there's no young quarterback like Vince Young. And you remember, Paul, how good Vince Young was as a rookie. I mean, Vince Young.
And I remember what a great job they did with him. I mean, he winds up being a bust.
Right. But when, and I don't remember what you wrote at the Tennessean back then, but I highly doubt it was, I don't think Vince Young's going to work out after, what was it? Didn't they finish like 8-2 or 8-1 down the stretch?
I don't know.
He was electric as a rookie.
Yeah, he was fantastic as a rookie. But let's talk about his three top picks before that. Pac-Man Jones, absolute embarrassment. Ben Troop
First of all, at that point in time,
and Andre Wolfolk, who is an incredible
Jones,
bust.
No, Wolfolk was bad. But I thought that Pac-Man Jones was the best player on the team that year that they got hot at the end in 2006 when he was punt returning and playing corner. I think, do you remember that Giants
game? So one-year players are okay with you. Because wasn't it his second year he was suspended or his third year?
No, it was his third year. So Pac-Man got suspended after Floyd left. But again, my point is, like, Pac-Man was the best player on the team. And Vince Young was rookie of the year and headed to the Pro Bowl. Those guys looked like young potential stars. And considering that Pac-Man played 15 years in the league, I wouldn't just say like, oh yeah, he sucked. You know, this isn't exactly like Caleb Farley, who's never played.
Do you think that they did good research on Pac-Man Jones?
I mean, again,
they didn't.
Okay, all right. I'm going to interject again. This is a compelling episode of Still In, Paulie. Jared, can you stick around for another segment?
Sure.
A little pause there. All right, we'll be back with more Still In, Paulie on Robbie and Rex Show. 102.5, 106.
Turn to his icon.
Hey, folks, tune in to 94.9 The Fan tomorrow at 3:15 for our college football game of the week. Missouri, South Carolina, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks home at 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. My goodness, Eli Drinkwitz and Shane Beamer. That's almost as good as Stillian Pauly on the radio. I tell you what. Jared Stillman back for another segment. So you guys are basically just bickering at each other about Floyd. Let me just jump in. First of all, the text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com. 615-737-1025. Got some interesting thoughts. I've got Chris and Asheville saying, please don't ever have these two on together again. I have the next texter saying, this is great content. Loving it. Matt says, I think Stillman and Kaharski on the air together is a bad idea. It's like putting two starving feral cats in a 10-by-10 walled empty lot, then spraying them with mouse cologne.
Jared, it's not feral.
Oh, my goodness.
So I actually was not prepared for Paul's intellectually dishonest argument that Rand Carthon and Chad Brinker are as good as Floyd Reese.
Well, I'm not saying they're as good. Right. I'm saying that you're insisting they be
when
fired.
Floyd got fired.
Jared, can I jump in?
Go ahead.
We can continue to debate. I will say that at this moment, I would tend to agree with Jared that the track record of Floyd prior to the record you cite, Paul, is a very important piece of context
sure.
in this discussion. Okay.
But 3 years is 3 years.
Jared, go ahead.
Plus a couple of other things. Number one, It's a 2-year sample size, not a 3-year sample size, because Rand Carthon and Chad Brinker haven't been running the Titans for 3 years. So that's kind of a, you're moving the goalpost to fit your argument with that 17 wins, because right now, over those 2 years, and I'm not saying 12 and 20 is any good, but those teams, the last two Floyd Reese teams, were 12 and 20, including winning 6 of their last 7. With the rookie of the year at quarterback, they went 8-8 there last year. You think this team is going to be 9-8 or 8-9, Paul?
No, of course not.
All right.
Okay. Then on top of that, like, the winning percentage over the 2 years was more in favor of Floyd and Jeff Fisher than it is as of right now. Again, not huge, but 375 to 320. And on top of it, where is the hope that this team will be better next year? Because when you win 6 of your last 7 and you have the rookie of the year at quarterback that you drafted 3rd overall, and again, you could say, well, it was Bud Adams' pick, it wasn't Floyd. Well, it was Mike Vrabel's pick, not Rand Carthon's, which a lot of people are starting to perpetuate about Will Levis, which
true.
You know isn't true.
It's not true.
But again, I mean, to me, there's a massive difference. If this team reels off 6 wins in a row, I promise you, the talk around here will be different. They're just not going.
Here's
to,
the hope,
so we don't have to worry,
Jared. Here's the hope. You just got to be patient once in a while. You can't fire everybody all the time. Dan Campbell didn't get fired after 3-13-1. And that's what.
Do you have hope that Rand Carthon is going to turn this
around?
I'm
not a big Rand Carthon guy, but I you can't fire Brian Callahan after 1 year. And I think they need stability.
Why
and
not?
I don't like Rand Carthon. But I think you got to give him more time.
Well, hold on.
I think you had to give Robinson
more
time.
I'm glad we're finally getting away from Floyd. Floyd's the greatest GM in Titans history, you know.
Which isn't saying much based on the franchise being absolutely middling.
It was an interesting point.
And Jared puts him on a pedestal he doesn't deserve.
You are such a hater.
All right, hold on. First of all, I got a text that says, intellectually dishonest coming from Stoneman is hilarious. Good morning, Kettle. But I tend to agree more with Jared on this. But I think we do need to take it to now, okay? I mean, we can, you know, let's take it to now. First of all, hold on, Jared.
I would just like to say for the record,
okay,
Paul knows that Rand Carthon and Chad Brinker could not even hold Floyd's jock, couldn't even be in the same conversation. And that's where I think it's intellectually dishonest.
Well, I got to come back with this. You tell the right tackle story over and over and over. Here's a story I've never heard from you, and I admit I don't listen that much. In 8 drafts, Floyd Reese drafted Darren Hall, Eddie Berlin, Justin McCarron, Daryl Hill, Jake Schifino, Tyrone Calico, Roydell Williams, Brandon Jones, Courtney Roby, and Jonathan Orr. Which one of those is your favorite? And can you find me a GM who had a worse record at wide receiver in history in 8 drafts? Rand Carthon and Chad Brinker are going to do better than that.
I mean, again, you're going to sit here and tell me.
So for every right tackle story, tell the wide receiver story.
Well, again, Floyd has said, in fact, said on record, because you just happened to leave out Derek Mason. I mean,
Derek Mason was 1997.
I think he was pretty good.
1997.
You just brought up all the bad players.
Well, I'm telling you, from 1999
to rookie team.
Chris Sanders was also drafted
by
the way. Justin
McCarron
sucked.
How about Drew Bennett as an undrafted free agent? That was pretty good, huh, Paul?
You're naming, like, one guy from this period, 1999 to 2006.
But see, what
how
you
about
are,
a draft pick?
See, Paul, what you are doing, though, you're doing what Jared does, which is you're spinning things and only taking one side of it. Like, Jared will never say anything good that these guys have done. There isn't a lot, but if J.C. Latham is a good pick,
well,
that's a pretty important thing, right?
Listen,
but Jared won't talk about that. You are doing the
Floyd,
same thing he does right now.
I'm giving some context to Floyd because the right tackle story apparently is the greatest moment in the history of general management.
You have definitely come in here with an agenda to attack Floyd today. It's interesting.
Well, I want to come in and offset the right tackle story and tell the wide receiver story.
Yeah.
Because you had good right tackles, but you couldn't throw passes for all of these years because Jake Schifino was the target that you gave Steve McNair. While he was well protected by the right tackle.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if Jared has said, like,
when was
Floyd
Steve
is one of the
throwing to Jake Schifino in a game?
he wasn't because Schifino
Steve
couldn't
McNair
get on the
throwing
field.
To Derek Mason, Justin McCarron, Drew Bennett. Good receivers.
All right, hold on.
Justin McCarron was a good receiver.
I'm jumping in here. Here's what I wanted to get to. Okay, we can gripe back and forth. Floyd's the greatest GM in Titans history. I don't think Jared said he's one of the greatest GMs in NFL history. I don't think people would say that. Maybe I missed that from Jared. But But the point is, let's take it to now. Let's take it to now, okay? And the Jared is insistent that everyone has to put it on. No, you must decide right now, are they fired or not? And I've said I would not fire them. So, Paul, just on them, not worried about Floyd Reese 15, 20 years ago, why are you not firing this front office?
Because you got to show some patience and stick some things out. You can't fire the coach.
What do you like about what they've done? What do you like about what they've done?
I don't love a lot of what they've done, but I think Latham is a good player. I think Sweat has the potential to be a good player. Hopefully in year two, you see significant progress. I think Brownlee's symbolically kind of shows what they can get. You build on those three picks.
Wow.
Hopefully
Brownlee.
You have I mean,
well, I mean, a fifth-round pick, Jared, a fifth-round pick who could be a starter is pretty good, right?
I think
again,
Brownlee's
like you want to spin LeSean everything
Sims.
To
and LeSean
it's all
Sims
bad.
Was a solid draft.
No, he's
guy.
Way
he's
better
than LeSean
Sims,
Jared. Let's come on.
Naive idiocy.
That's pretty bad. That's a pretty bad take, Jared.
That's a really bad take, and everything doesn't have to be a take. And look, he's that was his first draft without a heavy-handed coach. That system's slow to take over. They could be, I don't love it, but they could be like Detroit. And that's what Amy's looking at. So if this is first year Dan Campbell and next year is second year Dan Campbell, then, you know, I haven't looked carefully at Brad Holmes's first year. I need to go do that. But it's potential that they could be on that track.
So again,
Jared.
Well, I'll ask again. I talk about the hope here because I hear the comparison to Dan Campbell. So you're saying this is year one and not year two because a lot of people that are making the excuses for the administration.
Well, that's the problem, right? They're on different timelines.
I don't like that they're not on the same timeline.
Whereas those guys are on the same timeline.
And she consistently does that, and that's bad.
And I agree. But my point is by the end of year two, and this was year two of Brad Holmes, by the end of year two, the Lions, just like that Floyd team that you said stunk, that won six of their last seven, you know, was right there on the cusp of the playoffs. They had hope. They had the number one draft choice at quarterback that was rookie of the year. The Lions had two first-round draft picks that were coming in each of the next 2 years because of their trades. They had drafted Aiden Hutchinson. They had drafted Penei Sewell. They had drafted, like, franchise, you know, true players, Amon-Ra St. Brown, that you build around. Brownlee, I'm sorry, he's not a franchise piece that you build around.
Right, the point is that it's a good pick.
Well, how is a new GM going to get them two first-round picks? They're going to have the same draft picks that they'd have with Ran or with the new guy. I don't know where the picks magically come from.
How did John Robinson get them two first-round draft picks when he showed up? Because he traded down, which Ran hasn't done.
Yeah, Ran's not a good trade downer. I give you that.
Hey, we got holes.
Don't pretend that I love Ran. I don't.
I just
don't think he should be fired.
You're trying to compare Rand to Floyd Reese.
Great stealing, Pauly. Thank you, Jared, for the extra time. We will come back and react to some of this.
By the way, hold on. I would just like to say this. Justin McCarron's over a three-year period, because, again, Pauly, Justin McCarron, he was there, but he was for the Titans in 2003. 82 catches. 47 catches, 813 yards.
Wow.
7 touchdowns.
Justin
the next
McCann's
year with the Jets,
average at best.
56 catches, 770 yards, 4 touchdowns, 43 catches, 700. Dude, you're talking about him like he was trailing
first. If your big defensive Titans wide receivers history is Justin
is
McCann's,
Derek Mason,
you
Justin
lose.
McCann's and Drew Bennett, yes.
Derek
Steven
Mason
won an MVP
20,
with those
Derek
guys.
Derek Mason played 25 years ago, Jared.
Okay, we'll be back.
Stillbilly, goodbye.
Floyd Reese, GM 25 years ago.
Stillbilly, goodbye.
I'm in Rex Show.
Stillbilly, goodbye.
We'll be back. 102.5, 106.3 the game. Join Jared Stillman, speak of the devil. Chris Sanders and Derek Mason, speak of the devil. Downtown at John Bon Jovi's Nashville this Sunday for the pregame show from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. They're going to break down the Titans Week 11 matchup against the Minnesota Vikings, give you the latest updates before the game. The pregame show presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Sundeck Nashville, Sloan's Motorcycle ATV, and award-winning Blue Note Juke Joint and Blue Note Crossroads Bourbon. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad. Paul Kuharski in for Robbie Stanley, screaming a lot at Jared Stillman today.
Stillbilly. Don't call him Jared.
Stillbilly. I'll have to get used to that. So let's get into a little bit. And we've talked around this some, but the Lions comparison, because, of course, the Lions, As I've said, I texted with my little brother the other day, like, you know, in our lifetimes, the Detroit Lions have never been the best team in the NFL. Like, it's never been the case. They had one team that made the NFC Championship game with Barry Sanders. They were 12-4, and they lost to Mark Rippon and Washington, who went on to blow everybody out and win the Super Bowl. But they've never been the best team. I would say they are, right? Or they have a case, at least, as the best team.
And they're the best team in the NFC.
And yeah, the best team in the NFC. They have a case as they could be the best team in the NFL. They're like, they have a chance. They have one of the best and youngest rosters in the NFL. Titans have one of the worst and, I believe, oldest? Right? I mean, it's one of the oldest.
Top five.
So, you know, so how the heck is there a fair comparison? You make the comparison in terms of the patience, right? I mean, I do think there's fair points on both sides. I mean, Jared laid out a lot of the things that they have already done to this point to set themselves up for that success that they had. Now, one thing that this team didn't have the benefit of and that team did, well, they had Matthew Stafford who had been there forever, and the Rams wanted to give the world for Matthew Stafford. So if you have that to jumpstart your process, well, that's great for you. The Titans did not have the benefit of that. This front office did not have something like that. So that's also something you have to keep in mind.
I also think they got fortunate because nobody thought that getting Jared Goff in that trade, I mean, he was a throw-in. Nobody thought, well, the Lions have their quarterback to build around. They thought, at best, they have a bridge,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Then they got good coaches who turned Jared Goff around. I still can't stand Jared Goff. The guy didn't know the sun rose in the east. He did not know on Hard Knocks when they were talking, walking around or whatever, about where the sun
rose. I miss that one.
Rose.
Is that right?
That it rose in the east. All right, so that guy, to me, has crossed off the list. Like, if you're that dumb, you can't be my quarterback.
Yeah, that's interesting. No, I mean, Jared Goff is an absolutely primary example of
patience.
Well, but he's a primary example of if you put the right things around a quarterback who can do some things well, if you give good conditions, give him the best offensive line in the NFL, give him great backs, receivers, a great tight end, he might look like an all-pro. We were talking about Jared Goff for MVP, which he just blew up with his five picks. Look at the Lions draft in 2021, okay? So this is the first draft for Brad Holmes. Penei Sewell, that was the big debate, right? Sewell or Ja'Marr Chase?
It was Cincinnati's debate, not the Lions.
It was, right, but the debate was which way do you go if you're the Bengals? And, of course, both turn out to be yes. Levi Onwuzurki, Aleem McNeil, Melifonwu, fourth round, Amon-Ra St. Brown, fourth round, Derek Barnes. It's an insanely good draft. Like, that's and right now, so far in the two drafts we have with this front office, you don't have anything that looks like it would be something like that. The next year, Aiden Hutchinson and Jameson Williams with the first round. Josh Pascal in the second round. He's a good player. Kirby Joseph is one of the highest-rated safeties in the league right now. You got Malcolm Rodriguez in the sixth round and James Houston in the sixth round. And those guys are, like, starters. I mean –
What was their first year impact? Somebody like Rodriguez and Houston.
That's a good question, and I honestly can't. You know, Houston was pretty good. Then he got hurt. Now he's back. Now and he's a sixth round. But Rodriguez pretty quickly was like, wow, this guy actually can play. Okay, next year he got ripped for Jahmyr Gibbs in the first round and Jack Campbell in the first round, a running back and a linebacker in today's NFL. Well, they're both really good players. Jahmyr Gibbs is electric. Sam Laporta in the second round. Brian Branch in the second round. Then you have Hendon Hooker. And, I mean, for the way they've been drafting, for all I know you guys call me a Vols homer. He's going to end up being well, that's fine. He's going to end up being a, you know, a star. But, like, the drafting for them has been absurdly good. And so that's what it comes down to. And, yeah, they got the jump start. They got the extra first-round picks. They have two first-round picks in both 22 and 23. Also, look, obviously they have – I mean, they have – a great offensive coordinator. They have a lot going for them, right? So the comparison, I mean, I think that there's a fair comparison that you make in terms of it's so early. I definitely see way more challenges here with these guys getting out of what they're in. They don't have a path. And like you said, Jared Goff becoming what he has become is something that was unexpected. But also it's because of the team building they did. They have helped him get to that point. And then, of course, he's taken off and has confidence and all that stuff. I mean, the Titans don't have answers in so many places that the Lions did pretty early on here in this process.
And if she fires them, I'm not going to be miserable. But again, I don't think she'll fire Callahan after 1 year. So if she fires the front office, then you've got a front office that's off timeline with Callahan. Then if Callahan has a bad year, you fire him, and then the new front office is hiring a coach, and then you're at the beginning of 2026 at a fresh start level. I don't know. I mean, you're not a fan of the firing them either.
No, I would not fire them. And I'm not firing them with this great confidence, like they're going to figure it out. Yeah. I'm not firing them thinking then they'll be fine, and 10 years from now we'll be talking about how great they are. But no, at this point, look.
Get to work, boys.
The disingenuous thing that Jared does here, and you just did it with your spin stuff too, it's like rather than take the information in all and assess it and try to be fair, he tries to, if he decides someone needs to be fired, J.C. Latham, that's what you're supposed to do. Hey, buddy, let's go through John Robinson's first-round picks again. You just went through first-round picks that work out and actually turn out to be players that should be drafted at 7. Every GM doesn't do that every year. No. I just went through the Lions. It's an insane run they're on. No, you do not just sniff at that. You do not just minimize that and ignore that.
Especially after John Robinson, who he somehow defends, who had one of the all-time bad runs.
Right.
Not just players who turned out to be not first round. There's players who turned out to not be in a league.
Right. Well, of course. And that, look, like it or not, that's why the job opened, and that's part of the issues that they still have. So, no, I'm giving them, if I'm ownership, I'm giving them another cycle. And I'm not saying next year you better be 13-4, but some of these moves that they've already made better start looking better, right? There's some things on the field that need to work out better. And then, of course, they have to have a much better free agency period. That looks bad. And they have to have a draft that gives you instant impact next year. Have to. So that's where I am. We will talk. We will get more into this. I do have a Rex rant coming up after something Greg Sankey said that I just cannot ignore. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
I like that. I like that intro, too. Yeah, they played last Friday. I went to that show, too.
How was it?
Creek guy, too. It was great. It was excellent.
Awesome.
Excellent. It sounded great. Yeah. My whole family is big Creed and grew up in that era. And actually, their song Higher, when I was playing in Orlando, Florida, in the old IHL, that was kind of our song that year. So, there's songs always kind of bring you back, and you tie certain things in your life to certain songs. And that was a big part of mine right there.
Well, it's time for the Rex Rant. There was a clip of Preds assistant coach Todd Richards yesterday talking about his love for Creed. And I said, I bet. That's beautiful.
I mean, if you were ever at a Nashville event, you'd have to go up to him and say, hey, by the way, I hate Creed.
Good one. Yeah, hey, everybody's allowed to like what they like. And I mean, Robbie's allowed to have maybe the worst music take of all time, which is that the Beatles are trash. So that's pretty bad. I feel kind of bad that Todd Richards had no idea he was walking into the den of a Creed hater. But
yeah, that's what I think he deserves to know. And the right way for him to know would be for you to go to a skate.
We were talking about it afterwards. Hopefully he was listening and kind of found out at
he
the
wasn't
time.
Listening.
Couple quick things.
It's delusional.
Well, I mean, when you're on the phone, sometimes I'll keep listening. If you do like a radio interview with somebody, and it's like they're continuing to talk about it, I'll just keep listening.
You listen to see if they're talking about you.
Well, just to see. Yeah, sure. Why not?
It's funny. The first time I was ever on with Kornheiser, the producer told me before, he's like, hey, stay on the line after. He'll talk about you, and you'll find out what he actually thinks
about you. See, there you go. So it's possible that he does. But, yeah, I'll let him know.
I was a wee child.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
I'll let him know.
Now I hang up immediately. I don't care.
I mean, for the most part, yeah, it's like, okay, thanks, and then click. But a couple of things I want to get to. First of all, I'm just going to say this real fast because I know Steve Buckley wrote a column about this in The Athletic. Michael Strahan, there's a controversy because he didn't have his hand over his heart. Michael Strahan, like me as an Army brat, Anybody making a controversy out of that is an absolute disingenuous, moronic piece of crap. So let me just get that out of there right now. But I want to talk today.
It's not mandatory to put your hand over your heart.
Yeah, it's just, it's insane.
It's outrageous.
The insane fake outrage in the world is can truly be confounding. But speaking of confounding, I gotta get into Greg Sankey here. And I know, I mean, I'm looking, this is one of those things, I did not hear it, so I need to raise my hand. I'm reading Seth Emerson's story at The Athletic about this, okay? Did not hear it on Paul Feinbaum, and it appears there wasn't really a follow-up. So it's kind of like a quote that sort of drifts on its own, and then most of the conversation was just general, you know, SEC's amazing stuff that you would expect, right? And Sankey taking credit for predicting that there might be an A-team tie, which we might have. We might have many teams tied and go down to schedule strength as the tiebreaker for Atlanta. But here's the quote that Sankey gave that is truly boggling my mind a little bit. He said, quote, now, first of all, let me give you context. We're talking about the whole thing with whoever gets to the title game, you may be better off with two losses not getting to the title game and having a good enough resume to get into the playoff, as opposed to getting in with two losses and then, you know, risking a loss that knocks you out of the playoff. And so that's real, and that's the system we've created here. Greg Sankey says, quote, I would expect that the selection committee continues that form of thinking, that these championship games, that 13th data point, is more of a reward and a recognition for the work done, end quote. You know, it's a reward if you win, Greg. It's a reward if you win. If you play another game and you lose the game, your resume just got worse. I regret to inform you of this. So if you're suggesting, and again, I understand that's one quote, kind of isolated, I'd like more, and maybe he will clarify. But as I read that quote, I'm like, you can't seriously be suggesting that you don't take a hit for a loss in a conference championship game. If that's what we're
for
doing,
for them, it's an exhibition.
Let's get rid of the right.
For the winner, for the loser. You lift a trophy, and right. The loser, it's an exhibition
game. Because remember, the winners of these conference championship games in this system get an automatic bye. You know, or the top four. They are the top four seeds. They get a bye to the next round. There is a major reward for winning. So you're saying that you get the major reward for winning and you get no penalty for losing. That is not how the world works. And I would think that the SEC commissioner, who has been, of course, as ruthless and, frankly, as winning as anyone out there, would understand that. So, no, it's the reality is someone's going to get in that thing and that team might lose. And because that team loses, that team might not get to the playoff and them's the breaks.
Yeah.
Right?
And
can we all agree?
SEC teams,
can we all agree on something today?
SEC teams seem to value SEC titles.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
So would you rather be in that game and get a chance to win that trophy and advance, or would you rather not be in that game?
Well, let's take it to Tennessee because, you know, Tennessee – now, Tennessee getting there probably means Tennessee's safe. I mean, the one way Tennessee gets there, if Tennessee beats Georgia, they're in great shape to end up in that against the Texas A&M winner. So, but let's say with tiebreakers and all that, you know, you're a Vols fan, and Tennessee can either sit there with two losses and take its chances, or you win the tiebreaker, you go to Atlanta. You win. You not only win an SEC championship for the first time in 26 years, but you also
get a bye.
That's hey. But if you lose, you're not going to the playoff. Are you taking that deal or not? If you're a Vols fan, are you taking that deal?
I'd like to know what people
what
say.
What would you do?
I would go play for the championship, presume I'm going to win the championship, and presume I'm going to get the bye. Here's the other thing. Like, there's this presumption that if you get in the playoff, you're going to win. Like, say you're not getting the bye. Say you take the other thing. Say you take the other thing. I'm not going to the SEC championship game.
Right.
And I'm taking a slot in the playoff, but I'm a first-round slot.
Yep.
Well, you're presuming a win there. Like, what if you go as one of the 12 and you lose?
Sure.
So you're a top 12 team in the country.
Well,
are you raising a flag for that?
Well, and here's another thing about that, which is one of the big problems with this, is that if you're the team that doesn't go, you also are probably going to get a home playoff game, right? So
that's a nice revenue.
Yeah, revenue point. And also
how's the revenue on that? I'm presuming you get better revenue from hosting a home playoff game. Maybe you don't.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all part of the playoffs, so it's shared. But, I mean, certainly for the economic impact of your city, for sure, right, is massive. So, but that's kind of a flaw, too, right? It's like you could argue that being the 5 seed is great because you get to be home against the 12, right?
Yeah.
Now, nice you do step. Have to play an extra game. So, anyway, yeah, it's risk and reward. It's not just reward. Let's all agree on that. When we come
But what I would do is just play to win, and if I wind up in the championship game, I go to the championship game, and I'm thrilled about it.
Yeah, I mean, you have a chance to win a championship. That still should matter. When we come back, Teron Davenport, Robbie and Rexo, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.